Well, welcome to the True Man Podcast with Mike Van Pelt, the comeback coach, helping you gain peace, clarity, and understanding in your walk with God as a man, a father, and a spouse. Hey, get involved with the show. Send your email to mike@truemanlifecoaching.com. If you're wondering what's gone adrift in my masculine soul and asking, is there more to life? This is where it begins. This is the True Man Podcast. Welcome to the True Man Podcast. This is an invitation to radical reconstruction of a man's masculine heart and soul in a place of safe community where we dare to ask questions deep-seated inside a man and explore ways to help you become a better man, a better son, a better dad, and a better spouse. Well, welcome to the new year of the True Man Podcast. Thank you for joining the program. I'm excited about the year ahead and excited that you're here to join me. Now, in a world that often emphasizes strength, resilience, and assertiveness as defining characteristics of masculinity, the concept of mindfulness, it may seem odd with traditional expectations. However, the integration of mindfulness into the masculine realm has gained recognition as a powerful tool for fostering emotional intelligence, resilience, and overall well-being for men. So today on the True Man Podcast, we're going to explore the intersection of mindfulness and masculinity, breaking down stereotypes and highlighting the benefits of embracing a mindful approach to life with guest Bonnie Kowalik. Now, I think talking about mindfulness and masculinity is a great way to begin 2024. With that, let's get to my interview with Bonnie, and I'll catch you after the interview. So welcome to the True Man Podcast. You know, the longer I live and the more wisdom I seek, the more I realize how big a role being in the right mindset is. In fact, I've gotten to the point where I don't really understand why people choose to live with things like anxiety and stress. Now, of course, of particular interest to me is the idea of the lack of masculinity that we see permeating our culture right now and how some of these men have this misunderstanding of their mindset that they should have. So let's have a conversation about that today. With me is mindfulness coach Bonnie Kowalik, and today we are going to talk about the mindfulness in the masculine realm. So Bonnie, thank you for being on the True Man Podcast.
Well, thank you, Mike, for inviting me. I appreciate that very much, and it's a pleasure, and thanks for that lovely introduction.
Yeah, absolutely. So Bonnie, tell us, how did you get started in this mindfulness arena?
It's a bit of a journey. It's not for the faint of heart by any means. And I think my journey began and was inspired by the trials and tribulations I had raising my own son and noticing how he was struggling when he started entering the school system. And he, you know, definitely, you know, falls on the spectrum, you know, a very bright young man, but also struggles with a lot of attentional issues and anxiety and everything else that comes with kind of falling on the spectrum that way. So, you know, I was adamant. I didn't want him to be dumbed down and drugged up. Yeah. And I wanted to really look into alternative ways to support his brain health and his overall wellness and well-being. In terms that would optimize his development as he grew up. So, you know, I started dabbling into different things, you know, looked at nutrition and diet and supplements and looked at looking at things like guided meditation, certain prescribed music programs, definitely, you know, engaging him with physical activity was a big part of it. So really looking at his whole lifestyle diet, if you want to call it that, and really looking at, you know, where can we fine tune that so that would help support his capacity to stay more focused, to be engaged with his learning and socially to be able to be developing at a normal rate of development. Because I don't know if you know it or not there, Mike, but men's brains or boys' brains tend to integrate much later than women's do in terms of when they're really wiring and firing at their full capacity.
Some men's brains never kick in at all, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, some of their, it's true. but really, I mean, it can take upwards to like 33 years of age before a man's brain is fully developed. So needless to say, my son really inspired me to look at some other ways of supporting his overall healthy development and his mental health in particular, because, you know, I noticed, you know, how anxious he would become, you know, in certain situations where there wasn't that routine and that consistency, which provided that safer container for him to learn and cope and adapt. Right. And unfortunately, you know, he, you know, learned some, you know, poor ways of coping. And, you know, part of it is it's very interesting, you know, in terms of the male kind of bonding and connecting, you know, from the time, you know, young boys reach manhood. But there's a lot of, you know, I noticed there was like a lot of shaming that goes on relative to men that want to embrace their sensitivity, their vulnerability, their authenticity. And, you know, as a result of that, you know, what I noticed over the years was that, you know, my son became, you know, what I call armored up. You know, he literally, you know, in his effort to try to cope and manage, you know, the whole socialization aspect of becoming a young man, you know, he had to suppress a lot of his innate, you know, traits or qualities that were actually gifts. I mean, the kid is, you know, amazingly, you know, intuitive and really has a, you know, a lot of emotional intelligence, but, you know, that wasn't supported, you know, within the school system, you know, and if anything else, you know, if, you know, he, you know, had an emotional reaction or response or moved into, say, overwhelm and would get stressed right out, his brain would literally go offline. And I mean, that's what all the, you know, the brain experts in the field are saying. Like Dan Siegel is a good example of that. You know, he talks about, you know, what happens to the brain when it's being flooded with stress or stressful triggers. And I mean, either you're going to go into fight, flight, or freeze. Yeah. And I mean, with him, he tended to go into the fight mode, or sometimes he'd run away too, but more often than not, that was his way. And quote unquote, the more acceptable way for a young boy to be able to manage his emotional overwhelm. So he would, you know, become quite hostile and aggressive. And then, of course, he started to learn that that wasn't okay. So then he started to shut right down, you know, and it was like, oh, I, you know, I can't have these feelings or these emotions. They're not acceptable. You know, I can't cry. I can't show this very sensitive side. I can't wear my heart on my sleeve because, God forbid, I'm going to be crucified for it, or I'll be, you know, labeled and shamed into silence. You know, and so, you know, over the years that did not serve him very well, you know, even though, and so I ended up looking at mindfulness as a way to support his capacity to really be able to stay focused, to be able to self-regulate, to be able to develop a sense of self-awareness and deeper reflective capacity so that, you know, he had some insight into himself and into what was going on in his internal world. And so, but you know, back in the day, you know, mindfulness was a pretty, you know, what do you want to call it? It's on the fringe of being, you know, people didn't understand it. And, you know, a lot of parents would look at me like the granola mom who was, you know,
she's,
you know,
what?
She's, what is she doing? She's, you know, she's putting her kid on a restricted diet or a diet that supports his brain health, you know, and parents didn't want to learn, or even educators didn't really want to understand what I was trying to do. Their minds were closed, and their capacity to embrace other ways, other perspectives around how to support healthy development for young boys and men was just not there. And I still think it's still quite limited in terms of the educational system, in terms of the mental health system, human services. It's like, you know, it's starting to catch up to speed. And now, you know, mindfulness is the latest novel trend and everybody wants to jump on board. And it has its merits, but it also has its deficits like anything else. It's not the end all for mental health issues. And I mean, so I preface it that way because, you know, there is this, I read an article, it was called, instead of, you know, I'm having a brain burp at the moment, McDonald's, you know, you're thinking of McDonald's, they would call it, you know, it was kind of the article was focusing on mindfulness in that same frame. It's like this latest franchise on how you basically tackle the mental health crisis that we have right now globally, easy, right? You know, and it's like, no, you know, mindfulness needs to be broached a little bit with kid gloves because, you know, it's kind of like opening Pandora's box, because if somebody does have a chronic mental health issue, they try and band-aid it with mindfulness and they don't really know what they're doing, or they're not working with somebody that is trauma-informed, which I am, you know, if they come, you know, at a mindfulness practice with a big trauma history or a lot of stress that they haven't really learned to face and cope and build a sense of resiliency, you know, they could potentially, you know, push them to themselves to a breaking point. So, you know, you need to really be conscious of, okay, how people can self-regulate and how people can get themselves back to a place of feeling centered so that they can respond appropriately. Or like, you know, Dan Siegel talks about, you know, the frontal lobe or our executive functioning going offline when we're stressed out or when we're in a state we're experiencing some type of trauma. So, I mean, I think about my son, and the biggest thing that he had to deal with was a lot of bullying, you know, growing up, you know, and he didn't have the skills or the awareness or the capacity to cope with it. And then we're looking at a, you know, education system that, you know, from my perspective, it's quite broken. It isn't serving the needs of students to optimize their development. Teachers are not fully equipped to manage some of these, you know, the behaviors and the mental health challenges. And right now, post-pandemic, I mean, all this stuff is just blossomed, you know, tenfold. I mean, and, you know, so, you know, we have an education system that's not equipped to deal with the fallout. We have a mental health care system that's not, or a healthcare system that's not prepared to deal with the fallout. So it's like these poor kids are struggling, both male and female, but males have always kind of, they fall between the cracks. You know, they really don't get the support and the services and the understanding they need in terms of, you know, how to tailor, you know, educational strategies or mental health strategies to meet the needs of where men are at in terms of how their brains are wired and how they're firing, how they cope, how they're socialized. All these factors come into play when it comes to supporting somebody's optimal mental and physical well-being. And I mean, then you see the issue of what's happening when men move into leadership roles. And then it's like, okay, if you have a man who's got a trauma history or has any kind of mental health issues and he moves into a leadership position, do you think he's going to be equipped to be an effective leader?
Well, you know, what's interesting about this is you started out, you know, talking about how you got into mindfulness with your son. And I think what's interesting about that is, you know, when we talk about traumas that happen really in the adult world, not just to men, but to women as well, most traumas that occur, unfortunately, I mean, you look at the age ranges, for whatever reason, it seems to be that 6, 7, 8-year-old range. Somebody has a trauma occur. And then, you know, it doesn't hit them. And like you were saying, a man's brain may not be fully developed until they're 33. Well, my gosh, by the time you're in your 30s, you could be in your 40s and it hits you between the eyes that, wow, I'm like not living the life that I thought I was meant to live, you know? And so, but a lot of that is occurring at such a young age. So how can we reverse some of this and help these young men when they're, yeah, I mean, trauma is going to occur. Let's face it. Unfortunately, we can't get away from that. But how can we reverse this trend and help young boys advance into manhood more equipped?
You know, I've often pondered that. And I think a big piece of the puzzle is these young boys are in need of really healthy male role models. Mm-hmm. You know, and in terms of, you know, what it means to be a healthy, well-adjusted young man. And in this day and age when, you know, we have, you know, so much going on in our crazy world right now, we have a significant leadership crisis that, yeah. that, you know, even the average man right now can't even look to for good.
I got nothing on that.
for a good example, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, so that's a big piece of it is creating, you know, networks of really healthy men that can be mentors and role models for these young boys. And I mean, another piece of the puzzle, of course, I think is equipping, you know, teachers, educators, anyone who has any influence over the development of our young boys, you know? And, you know, so, I mean, getting teachers up to speed. You know, I often used to talk with some of my friends and colleagues who are educators here in Canada. And I said, you know, I almost feel like every educator needs to be trained in special ed because special education teachers have a much greater span or width of skill set to manage and adapt to a diverse room of learners. So, you know, I think that's a part of a strategy that could be, you know, brought into it from a systemic perspective. Yeah. And I think a big piece of it too is, you know, creating opportunities for family systems to be able to dialogue and engage with each other, you know. So, I mean, in drawing from the collective wisdom of other families that are struggling. I mean, how often do families sit together and share their struggles in terms of parenting and raising their young boys? I mean, I think if those types of networks were created, I think that would definitely help to support families more because they wouldn't be feeling isolated, like they're having to do this alone. There's a great book by an author called Attunement, and love the man. I sat in on a webinar recently, and you know, he really was speaking a lot to this whole idea of building community. And I think that's why I also love, you know, supporting people in terms of their mindfulness practice, because you can build a community of people that are in practice together relative to their own mindfulness capacity. And I think in doing that, I mean, I offer a mindfulness-based stress reduction program for men online right now in collaboration with an organization called the Canadian Center for Men and Families. And, you know, a lot of the men come out of that one with a lot more skill, a lot more awareness, a lot more capacity to cope, build resiliency. But they also have the support of that community of men where they can share their insights, their wisdom. They can learn what works, what doesn't work, what are their common challenges and barriers, you know, that they're dealing with that maybe gets in the way of their practice, that gets in the way of their being able to cope effectively. So I really almost think that some of that need, that peer support needs to be also offered for young boys so they have a blanket of support to be able to go to and be able to learn together some of these skills and hopefully be better equipped to be able to cope with the stressors of life, because stress never goes away, you know.
No.
I mean, my
biggest concern, and you bring this up, and it's one of my big concerns, we do, when we have challenges on our lives, and men are exceptionally good at this, isolation. If we have a challenge many times, rather than taking action on it, we will isolate from it. And then it just builds and builds and builds. And over time, what it tends to affect more than anything from what I've seen are relationships. So divorce comes into play. Yeah. Relationships with their children come into play. You know, it's not uncommon for me to say, well, I don't have much of a relationship with my children. Well, why is that? And, it's as if in a lot of cases, they try to put Band-Aids over a much larger wound rather than work on the wound itself. And I think I agree with you that building communities is, people should be leaning into communities, but they're not, because I think people have this premonition that it reveals something about them that they don't want to be true. And actually being vulnerable in that way is really where they need to sit.
Absolutely. I think, and I think the key piece of that too is creating safe containers, you know, so people will lean into that vulnerability so that they will express, you know, from a heart space and not a head space. Because, you know, 80-90% of human beings, you know, function from their head up. They're they're not connected to their body viscerally. So they don't trust the body's wisdom. They are not connected to their heart space, because that's just too vulnerable.
It's too real. Yeah.
It's too real to be able to speak from your heart and speak from a place of truth. And so, you know, we've become really good at, you know, dancing around or armoring up and or distancing ourselves or just avoiding, denying, you know, blaming, procrastinating. I mean, there's all of these ways that we choose to try to cope with difficulty that actually disconnects us from not only other people, but from ourselves.
So, that's a good point. So how can we encourage men to listen to their heart and speak into their heart versus doing some of the screwy things that come out of their head?
Well, I think part of it is making space and time for stillness and silence.
Oh, yes.
Because how can you listen and pay attention to, you know, other spaces in your being, like in terms of your heart space or in terms of trusting your gut instinct and your intuition? You know, and with all the noise and the distraction we have in the world right now, if we don't quiet the mind, we can't pay attention to these other ways of knowing and the wisdom that we inherently have as human beings, you know. And I think I truly believe, and when I coach and I do counseling with my clients, that when I support them to be able to resource within themselves, every human being has the seeds of truth and healing within them, you know, to heal those wounds. Yeah. And it might not be the same trajectory in terms of their healing journey, but they will find, you know, in collaboration with somebody like me that walks with them as a guide, they will find their own answers in time. And it's a bit of trial and error, seeing what works, what doesn't work. But I mean, that's why, you know, mindfulness is a practice, you know, that's why many things are considered a practice. Even medicine is considered a practice. It's, when you think about it. So, and teaching is, in my opinion, a practice too. And, you know, having a marriage is a practice. Having a family is a practice. Yeah. Nobody gives us a book and a manual to, you know, how we're going to have a healthy, you know, enriching marriage or family. I mean, it takes time to, and that's why if we don't build community, how can we draw from that collective wisdom? I mean, the Indigenous people had such a great insight into that because, you know, they come together in community. When somebody is struggling, when somebody is suffering. And so they don't have to suffer in isolation. They don't have to feel like they have to carry the burden of their emotional wounds, their psychological wounds all by themselves, because they have that beauty, the beauty of the community to support them, to hear them, to really hear them and be present to them.
Yeah.
And I think that communication is a critical piece of supporting healthy relationships and learning to also work with conflict, you know, in relationships, you know, whether it's with our partner, our colleagues, our kids. And, you know, it's like, it doesn't mean it needs to be a screaming match, but you also don't want to, you don't want to avoid conflict.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't get, that doesn't solve the problem or doesn't get to the heart of what really matters. That's really going to move, you know, people in relationship to places of forgiveness and understanding and compassion and empathy. That's not going to happen if people don't have the capacity to develop their communication.
Yeah,
and especially you, listening is a really critical one.
Don't you think that part of the reason that we avoid conflict is just this whole idea of, well, this is just going to come out as an argument and I don't even want to bother with it. I'm not going to tell my wife this, this, and this because I don't want it to end in an argument. And so ultimately what happens is you do something in silence, typically comes out later, and then the problem is, you know, that much more monumental. Mm-hmm. You know, doesn't it make more sense to just sit down and have these conversations right up front?
In my mind, that makes perfect sense, but it's for some reason we have learned that it's easier to avoid aversion to, you know, and our brains are wired that way too. We want, you know, we are drawn to pleasure and we avoid pain, right? And when we move into conflict, there's potential for pain there. There's potential for misunderstanding. There's potential for hurt feelings. There's potential for resentment, for awkwardness, awkward silence, you know, and versus saying, you know, and, or even they don't, I think there's a misperception that conflict can be the fruit of possibility. Oh. It doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to end in pain and distress if done with intention to repair.
Yeah, I mean, some of the biggest challenges that we face can really lead towards some of our greatest victories. I would think that that would also be true in conflict. You know, conflict is to a large degree unavoidable, particularly in marriage, right? I mean, you know, we get married, you're two different people. You come from two different backgrounds. It's inevitable that there's going to be some level of conflict there. But, you know, do you really want to live that way? Or is it something that you can work through? And I'm amazed at the number of people, especially now. I'll just say the divorce rate seems extremely high to me. And it coincides with what I would call this microwave society, where we want everything fast and easy. We don't want to deal with anything hard, you know? And life, just generally speaking, doesn't work that way.
And it doesn't support resiliency.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I worked with some men coaching and counseling, and, you know, relationships were top of mind for a couple of them. And, you know, often I would coach them around this whole idea of, not only do you want to, you know, be resilient in and of yourself, but you also want to build capacity and resiliency in your relationship with your partner.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, as soon as there's some grievous incident or experience that happens within the context of your relationship, if you don't have that inner capacity, that resiliency, that will to persevere, then you're just going to throw away the baby with the bathwater. Wow. And you're just going to give up and throw in the towel. And it's like, and that's what happens, is that you know, relationships will hit a wall at some point, and they either work through it and thrive, or the relationship dies and doesn't survive. You know, you can't expect, you know, a plant to live if you don't water it and you don't, you know, give it the nutrients it needs, or to transplant it and transform it, because it's going to grow. It's going to transform over time. Same thing with relationships. You know, you either grow together and with each other, and you uplift each other to be the best versions of yourself, or you tear each other down and you tear the relationship apart.
You just reminded me I need to water a couple plants outside. But thank you for
that. No worries.
How can we encourage? This is one of the challenges I feel like men face. Oh, man, is that we've buried all this stuff, man, and we just hope. We just hope, oh, dear God, I hope I never have to address this. But it feels like we always do at some point. Feels like it always comes out at some point, one way or another. Comes out. How can we address men, or how can we help men to stop burying that stuff and take a good hard look in the mirror, so that they can be the best man that they can be?
I guess you have to.
It's always great to get a woman's perspective on this.
But it's really about supporting them to hold space for their pain and their suffering.
Yeah.
You know, and that takes a lot of courage, you know, and you need to embrace that versus, you know, running away. That's a cowardly way of dealing with yourself and the things that matter most. And most of the time, you know, I bet, you know, if you interviewed 10 men, I bet you 9 out of 10 would say the things that they regret the most is not sticking with something and seeing it to the end.
Yeah.
And just, you know, just quitting halfway. I mean, I'm working with a man right now doing some coaching, and I mean, he's dealing with stuff with his wife and in his relationship. And you know, I said to him, I said, you know, and he's big into running marathons, and, you know, he used to be a competitive ski racer. And I said, so what would happen if you're running, and he's training for this marathon? And I said, so what's going to happen if you're training for the marathon and you got the last 500 yards to go and you just quit? Are you going to make it? Are you going to win? Are you going to, you know, how, you know, and it's the same thing like a relationship.
Yeah.
You got to go the distance. You know, in relationship and also in terms of supporting the relationship you have with yourself. Mm. I mean, if you have any sense of wanting to transform yourself and your life and your relationships, you can't keep on chasing the proverbial tail, as I call it, and repeating, you know, the sins of our fathers or our mothers. You cannot continue to bring those maladaptive patterns, ways of thinking, our beliefs, you know, and can perpetuate them. Somebody has to, you know, basically stand into, you know, putting a stop to it, you know, and really saying, no, this is not functional. This is not healthy. This is not helpful. I need to change. You know, because I don't want to be the same kind of communicator as my dad was.
Yeah.
Or I don't want to be the same kind of emotionally unavailable person as, you know, my father or my dad or my uncle or somebody was. It's like, or whoever was their mentor and their role model. I mean, so, you know, children tend to watch what we do more as adults versus listening to what we say. So if men don't want to model in healthy ways, then through their actions, they're going to perpetuate behaviors and ways of thinking and doing things that are not, that's going to be carried on from one generation to the next.
It's probably one of the larger problems that I see is that we repeat things that happened to us, that happened to our fathers. There seems to be this constant repetition of, you know, I think of it this way. I do feel like we're at a point in our culture where we have enough science and understanding behind things to really stop this. I mean, I grew up in a generation, right, where my dad was in Vietnam and, you know, my grandfather was in Korea. And, you know, you had all these guys that went off to war, first and foremost. And they saw things that I don't want to see, right? And then they came back and they decided, we ain't going to talk about it. So, you know, if you decide you're not going to talk about your emotions, you're already off to a bad start. And we've grown up of eras of these types of men. And I'm not knocking these men. They saw things, they did things, and they were God-fearing men. But, you know, in terms of meeting emotional needs in places where men needed to have emotional needs met, I don't think that that has occurred. And we have generations of men that are repeating the same mistakes. And, you know, I just see that men really, they do want to be seen and heard. They do want to express their emotions, but they're kind of looking over their shoulder sometimes going, is it okay to do this? Is it okay? Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, it's that permission giving, you know, it's okay to be real. It's okay to, you know, to have deep sorrow and regret or to be feeling insecure or even to feel afraid. It's okay. That's the human experience.
Well, I think that's probably an excellent way to leave this podcast today. Bonnie, tell everybody, how can they get, I just love your voice, by the way. It's so calming and soothing.
years of practice.
how can people get a hold of you and learn more about what you're doing?
Well, they certainly can reach out to me at my website, which is www.censusmindfulnesscoaching.com, or they can certainly email me at info@censusmindfulness.com as well. And happy to have a conversation and set up a discovery call if somebody's interested in learning a little bit more about my services. If they're struggling with their own mental health, their own emotional well-being, with their capacity, either in their relationships or even in their roles at work as leaders. Because I do work in the whole realm of, you know, leadership consulting as well. I do, a lot of mindfulness coaching and some psychotherapeutic support for those that want to do a deeper dive. So happy to have that complimentary discovery call with folks that are interested in learning more. I do, like I said, mentioned, I run a mindfulness-based stress reduction program online for men. So happy to share more about that too and see if people want to jump on board for that. So.
Well, there you go. And we'll, of course, put that in the show notes. Bonnie, thank you for being on the True Man podcast. I really enjoyed our conversation today.
Yeah, I did too. Thank you again for your time and your interest and look forward to connecting again.
All right. Take care.
Yeah, you too.
Now, I really had to laugh when Bonnie talked about the male brain being mature around the age of 32. I'm sure you got a chuckle out of that as well. And maybe you've found that to be true. And, you know, it's such an interesting time in a man's life when you get around that age. And here's why I think that number is critically important. According to a 2017 Stanford University study, the average age of a father in the United States is 27.4 years of age. And usually by that age of a fully developed brain, which Bonnie had at 32 years of age, you're getting a little further into your career. You're becoming more established. At that point, you're also becoming more mindful of yourself and what you like and what you don't like and what your dreams are. And if you're like me, you begin to really get into and consider, well, what is my faith look like? And maybe you're looking at that point for a closer relationship with Christ. You are becoming mindful of your life, and that's really important. Mindfulness, often associated with serenity and stillness, well, that might not be the first thing that comes to mind when you think about masculinity. Our society has long held onto a rigid stereotype of what it means to be a man. Strong, stoic, unyielding. But times are changing, and so is our understanding of masculinity and what it is. So, what exactly is mindfulness, and why is it relevant in the context of masculinity? Good questions. Well, mindfulness is the practice of being present in the moment, fully aware of your thoughts and feelings without judgment. It's about embracing vulnerability, understanding oneself, and fostering a deeper connection with the world around you. And I would dare say also your own individual heart. Now, there is an elephant in the room that we need to address. And that's the misconception that mindfulness is at odds with traditional masculinity. Now, in reality, mindfulness doesn't negate strength. It enhances it. Being mindful doesn't mean relinquishing control. It means gaining mastery over your reactions and responses. So to explore this further, let's consider the typical challenges faced by men in today's fast-paced world. You know, from career pressures to societal expectations, men often find themselves caught in a whirlwind of stress and expectations. Wouldn't you say that's true? Mindfulness offers a toolkit for navigating these challenges with grace and resilience. Now, it's crucial to recognize that embracing mindfulness doesn't make one any less of a man. In fact, it takes a certain level of strength to confront and understand one's emotions. Now, this isn't about abandoning the qualities traditionally associated with masculinity, but expanding the definition to include emotional intelligence, empathy, and self-awareness, all good things. Now, let's talk about the benefits. Mindfulness can be a game changer for men in terms of mental health. The ability to step back, observe thoughts without attachment, and manage stress is invaluable. Now, it doesn't mean becoming a Zen master overnight, of course, but rather a gradual journey towards a more balanced and centered self. Now, I want to share a personal story here. Now, as someone who grew up with the belief that expressing vulnerability was a sign of weakness, mindfulness became a lifeline. It allowed me to break free from the shackles of societal expectations and embrace my authentic self. Now, of course, it's an ongoing process, but the transformation for me has been profound, and I do believe it could be profound for you as well. So how can men incorporate mindfulness into their lives? Well, it doesn't require hours of meditation or a retreat in the mountains, though I found these to be very beneficial. Simple practices like focused breathing, mindful walking, or even just taking a moment to pause and check in with yourself can make significant differences in your life, believe me. And in conclusion, mindfulness in the masculine realm is not a contradiction. It's a revolution. It's about redefining masculinity to include emotional depth, self-awareness, and resilience. It's about acknowledging that strength isn't about suppressing vulnerability, but embracing it. Now, if you would like to learn more about embracing mindfulness, I'm up for it, and I'm offering you an invitation to reach out to me at mike@truemanlifecoaching.com. Let's set up that free initial call and talk about where you're at and where you want to go. So I want to thank you for joining me on this episode of the True Man Podcast. And if you enjoyed the interview, please leave us a great review on your favorite podcast channel. I always love to get those reviews. Really, really appreciate it. And remember, mindfulness is not a departure from masculinity, but an evolution. If you enjoyed today's discussion, please share it with others who might find it insightful. In fact, I encourage that. Until next time, I want to wish you the best and go out and make this your very best day ever. Improve your life today with Mike Van Pelt and True Man Life Coaching. Let's develop a roadmap of discovery that leads to success and satisfaction in your life. For additional information and details on how to schedule an initial coaching call, go to TrueManLifeCoaching.com.